But for today, I want to speak to you grads. And thankfully, the message isn't only for the grads, so you can't check out. Don't worry, you can't just be like, oh, okay, I'm not a grad, that's okay. It speaks to a lot of us, and I hope it speaks to all of us. But this is it, guys. Grads, you're looking to the future, wondering where you're going to go and where you want to do what you want to do. And I remember being asked constantly, what are you going to do next? And it's a good question. I mean, we want to know. It's a good curiosity to know. But I was like, for the 500th time, I don't know. Genuinely, I didn't know what I was going to do. I did not have a plan that far ahead. I was having too much fun with friends and video games and not realizing the future that was ahead of me. So I truly had no clue. And I remember being really afraid too. There was this pressure being placed on me. This pressure, I'm sure, is on a lot of us even to this day to answer that question. What am I going to do? And whatever feeling it brings up, because maybe it brings up anxiety, fear, doubt, joy. I don't know what it could bring. But this pressure, sadly to say, it doesn't stop. It just changes and morphs through our lifetime. For a lot of our lives, it's going to continue and it's going to change. Whereas grads, you're being asked, what are you going to do? Or maybe for adults, it's what are you doing? Or for seniors even, it's what can you do? Whatever the question might... Cam, no, that wasn't supposed to be funny. I thought maybe it could come across funny, but I know. Maybe it's... Yeah, that's a better way to say it. Maybe that is. But this pressure, it doesn't seem to stop. It continues on and it weighs on us through our lives. And I've seen and known people who are in this never-ending cycle of work, full schedule, finding time to do something enjoyable is impossible. And it's just a never-ending cycle. And maybe there's a word for this. And maybe this word is success, to strive for success. And I think it's a very, very loud voice in our culture to pursue success. And it's not inherently bad. Success isn't a bad thing. We want to succeed, and we want to do good. Sorry, I read something funny, and sorry, oh, my brain sometimes. Have fun with me today. We're going to have fun together. And so I find that within culture today, everything feels like a race to be the best, to get the best, to earn the best. And this, unfortunately, is the pace being set for us. Grads, it's the pace being set for you as you leave high school to enter into this new world. Go as fast as you can. Get there as fast as you can. And that's hard. If you want an example of pace, watch me walk through Costco and you'll see how fast life can move because I'm in and out, you know? But we want to succeed. We want our kids to succeed. We want to set them up well. And for our grads, this is a dream I'm sure that a lot of you have, to want to succeed in life and to go into good places. And the pursuit is not wrong, but where does it lead? When I was growing up my whole life, there was this stigma that to succeed, you have to work hard, you have to step on toes, and you have to leave things in the dust. Give up that personal life, not to its entirety, but you had to really move and you had to get up the ladder and you had to go places. And to have joy in life, you need a large house, a large salary. And maybe this wasn't people saying this to my life, but it was what I could see on social media, the news, other people's lives. They'd look down on me for what I had and be like, oh, you don't have this? Well, I also had 5 other siblings, so mom and dad, I love you for what you gave me. And so, grads, I ask you as you enter this new stage of life, is this what you believe needs to be rooted for accomplishment? Sorry, is this what you believe about life? That to have joy, to have good things, you need accomplishments and achievements in this pace, in this culture? Do you believe that this is all it is ever going to be? And so I ask you today even more, what if there is more? What if there is more to this life? What if there's more goodness than you can have? And what if it's not supposed to look this way? What if the life designed for us isn't supposed to look this way? Because my heart for us today is that we would bring ourselves before God and allow Him to view or to shape our view of the life we have been given. That the life as we see it would not be shaped by the culture around us, but by the beautiful voice of our Father in heaven who knows us and has designed our hearts to work and act in a specific way, that for grads especially, that you would walk into this next stage of life prioritizing what truly matters. Not just following the voice of this culture and what it wants of you to push you into. And then for all of us today who may just be scraping by on life, scared about what's next, that we too would prioritize what truly matters. There's this constant battle in the Bible between the way of the world and the way Jesus lived his life. Jesus himself, he butted heads with culture all the time. Not only culture, he butted heads with religious leaders, the Pharisees. He was always causing problems wherever he went, in a good way, in a way that we would be able to understand now today. And he even butted heads when he died on the criminal's cross for something he didn't deserve to do. Paul writes in his letter, he says this, he writes a letter to the Roman church in that time, Romans chapter 12, verse 2, and he says, "Don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, what is good, pleasing, and perfect." And I open with reading this because I think it's important that we understand that last part there, that you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good, pleasing, and perfect. Meaning, what God wants for you in life is good, pleasing, and perfect. He's not desiring for you to experience turmoil, tragedy every single step of the way, although they can happen. His way of life is the greatest thing we could bring into our lives. And we need not to copy the behavior, the pace that culture sets for us. We don't want to. We shouldn't be going after that, but be transformed continually to allow our voices to hear what God is truly saying to us. And as we look to be shaped by God, I want to go through a few speed bumps I think that culture is setting us up, setting you guys up for, and getting in the way of truly seeing God in our lives. And one of the first ones, I kind of tag team them together. It's these two titles, accomplishments and accumulation. In the Old Testament, there's a book that talks about a king named Solomon. And King Solomon, he opens one of his books, and it's called Ecclesiastes. And he opens it in one of the most craziest ways I've ever seen a book be opened. He says this. He says, "Everything is meaningless." I mean, that's some way to open a book. And the funny thing about this is King Solomon is known for his wisdom, his wealth. He builds a temple in Jerusalem. He's no small figure in society. He's a king. People knew him. Everybody knew his name. Other people from different nations knew his name. He was an important person who had accomplished, who had accumulated, and that's how he opens his book. So what's he saying? Everything is meaningless. Well, further into the book, he describes in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 8 to 11, he says this, "I collected great sums of silver and gold, the treasure of many kings and provinces. I hired wonderful singers, both men and women, and had many beautiful concubines. I had everything a man could desire, so I became greater than all who had lived in Jerusalem before me, and my wisdom never failed me. Anything I wanted, I would take. I denied myself no pleasure. I even found great pleasure in hard work, a reward for all my labors. But as I looked at everything I had worked so hard to accomplish, it was all so meaningless. Like chasing the wind, there was nothing really worthwhile anywhere." I don't know about you, but how many times do we hear this today? I don't hear it very often anywhere. That all the sums of the world, all the accomplishments, to even find reward in labor, which is a good thing, and I encourage you, this isn't a pass to say that you can't work in life. No, he found all of it to be good, but meaningless at the same time. I don't see this on social media, on television, in movies, or the news. This whole mentality that you need to accomplish and you need to accumulate is driving culture today. Pushing us forward. You have to be the greatest. You have to get the best. You have to set yourself in a place to succeed. And what King Solomon says about success has nothing to do with that. But what I do hear about accumulation and accomplishment, accumulation, like I said, is have wealth, have material things, always have more, more, and more. When I go through the Tim Hortons drive-thru and I get an ice cap, they ask me, do you want an espresso shot in your heavily caffeinated coffee already? I'm like, no, I don't want more caffeine in my coffee. I don't need an espresso shot. But it's just a constant push. Bigger is better. Or accomplishment being, be the best, look the best, make a name for yourself, do better than the next person, or climb the corporate ladder. And if you don't, you're a failure. You didn't make it. You didn't do anything. That scares me because we work more, we work harder than ever before, yet for some of us, happiness is a distant thought. Joy is a distant thought, and we feel we could never experience it. But maybe if one day, if we work hard enough, we can get it. We hope that if we work hard enough, we can retire early, then I'll be happy. Or we think if we get enough things, if I get that new phone, that new shirt, I will be happy. And maybe, but for a moment you would, but there's still an empty pursuit, searching for something deeper. Constantly. King Solomon sought for something deeper his entire life. I'm sure maybe you can think of someone you know who is searching in all the wrong places for something deeper to get that answer. And through this pursuit, this leads me to the second speed bump. And maybe you won't think I'm going to talk about this one, but I definitely am. And that's tiredness. Through this pursuit of accomplishment and accumulation, we're tired. Society is just tired. Through how the pace of life is going, through what culture is pushing us into, it's hard to keep up with everything going on. The latest news, the latest trend, the latest thing that is happening in the world, it's exhausting. Like I said, I bet you wouldn't think I'd be talking about that. But think about it. How many times do you ask someone in your week, how you doing? And the response is, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. Life's getting to me. I can't move forward. It's rhetorical. The question and the response of being tired, it's rhetorical. And I'm not to say that being tired is a bad thing. No way. That's not a bad thing, because truly we can be. We can be very, very tired. But the issue I find is that when we're tired, and I am the first to say this, it's hard to love God and it's hard to love people. Andrea, I'm sorry, in the mornings. Sometimes I'm way too tired. Sorry, Andrea. It's hard to love God and it's hard to love people when we're tired. Because here's the thing, tiredness, it affects the prefrontal cortex of our brain, which impacts decision-making, meaning our decisions and our choices are much harder to make in a good way when we're tired. This is where sin plays such a huge role in our lives. And tired people, like I said, they're just not loving sometimes. We're selfish, we're impatient, because I'm including myself in that. We're testy. And I talk about this because God's will for us, his will for you today is, listen to this, it's to have rest. It's to feel peace. Jesus says in his account, the account of his life in Matthew, Matthew writes about him in verse 20, or chapter 11, verse 28 to 30, and he says this, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest, specifically for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. How contrary is this? When I was graduating, I was so afraid of all the work that I had to do. I was already working a job. I was working my 9-to-5 at Walmart, and I was enjoying it, and it was tiring. It was exhausting. There were some hard days, some good days, light days. But to hear this, I wasn't experiencing that. I wasn't feeling that. And I think for us today, becoming like Jesus, it can be difficult, not because we're physically tired, but because we're spiritually tired. I think it goes so much deeper than wanting to just have more time to sleep in, to wanting to have more days off in our life, because Jesus says in there, he will give rest for your souls. So isn't that an important thing we should search, sorry, we should, that's a tongue twister, we should search for? And so isn't that an important thing we should search for in our lives? I've lived And I still live where it's difficult to wake up and spend time with him. It's difficult to prioritize part of my day to spend with him. It's difficult to get to church in the morning or youth at night. These things are difficult to do because our souls aren't experiencing what Jesus has promised here. A light burden, an easy yoke, a life for you that's good and peaceful and restful. The weight culture places on us, the weight our spirits feel because we're not going to the one who's taking care of us, who wants to take care of us. And I think this of myself. I think this. These are my thoughts sometimes. If I could only get more time on my phone, if I could only take in an extra half an hour in the morning to sleep in, if I could only get an extra day off, what does that sound like? More, more, more. It's this constant cycle. Back to the beginning of what we feel our bodies need, and in the reality of Jesus, he's saying your souls need some time to pause, to rest, and feel the burden I have for you. Because he will give you rest, he will take your burdens and give you what is light, what is easy to hold on to. And I found in the third speed bump, the last one, and I'm sure there's many other ones, but these are the ones I'm highlighting today. Lastly, this other area is a lack of delight. There's lots of things to enjoy around this world, lots of things. But I'm finding that culture has effect on this and how we delight in the things around us. And I find with each of these dynamics I've talked about, the accomplishment and accumulation, tiredness, this lack of delight, these are shaping how we view the world. That it's a dangerous place and a terrible place. We shouldn't want anything to do with it. And I find that the pace this culture makes us, it makes us miss the beauty of this world. I came from Edmonton. And so I need no say more about that. Because now I live in Kamloops and I look outside and there's already trees growing that I've never seen in my life because Edmonton is flat. You don't see a lot of trees there. Like, everywhere is beautiful. But more than that, there's sorrow all around us, all over social media. The news they give us, it's always the worst of the worst. When we look at social media, someone's always doing something better than us. They're always living a better life than us. They're going traveling places, or they're living up their grand scheme of life in a big house, whatever it looks like. Everything that's shown to us causes sorrow to our hearts, thinking we don't have that. Or whatever we might be thinking when we see that. And the blessings that God has given to us are lost because there's always something bigger and better. The small things Jesus is doing for you. Maybe it was this morning, someone giving you a hug, and you've been the loneliest person in the world the past week. Or maybe it was someone saying hi. Or for the lunch today, maybe you're going to eat something good and have a good conversation. Those are such big blessings for us. But we can miss it. They can be invisible to us. And these three things, accomplishment, accumulation, tiredness, lack of delight, like I've said before, they form a loop that brings us to this one reality that we are craving more. We want more. We desire more. And it's really interesting. Maybe you've heard of this book. It's called The Anxious Generation. And it's this study from this man, this author, Jonathan Haidt, who looks into the impact that technology is having on teenagers. And what he discovered in his study is not just about teenagers, and he's not a Christian either. This is another really cool thing, but he's determined that within every person's heart, there's a guy, his name's Blaise Pascal. He's an ancient devout Christian who said this term. He said, within every human heart, there is a hole desiring God. And this guy in this book who's studying the effect social media has, the technological advances, the iPhone, studying on teens, he agrees with that statement. And he's not a Christian. So within each of our hearts, there's this hole needing to be fulfilled. And I'm going to tell you something a little wild as to what I think would help fulfill that hole. And maybe you're like, I'm ready, Nate. And I don't know if you're expecting me to say what I'm about to say, but I hope it causes a little bit of angst in your heart or in your stomach being like, wait, what is he talking about? And let me get into it. I'll get into it. But the thing I want to talk to you about, it's something called Sabbath. This word Sabbath. I know, right? Like I said, maybe this is the big plot twist. You know, if this was a novel, this is the plot twist. This word Sabbath. And I know if you know what Sabbath is, then maybe you're like, huh, I can see where he's going. Or maybe if you don't know what Sabbath is, you have no clue where I'm going with this. But let me just quickly brief you on what Sabbath is traditionally, and then I'll get to the heart behind Sabbath. And that's where I want to land. So traditionally, the Sabbath is a weekly day of rest and worship rooted in biblical creation account. A day where no work was to be done. So for example, farmers in ancient history, in ancient biblical times, even throughout a lot of our recent history within the 20th century and on, 19th century and on, Sabbath would have been practiced. But for farmers, this is my example, they couldn't even let their livestock work on the Sabbath day. No livestock, no manual labor. Andrea was talking to me about Sabbath the other day, and she was saying, like, people don't even, like, I don't remember where you said it was, where Sabbath is heavily practiced in Jewish communities, like, elevators in buildings don't even run, like, or they do in a weird way. Like, electricity isn't allowed. It is a very intentional day to stop, to not allow any work to be done. And so I say Sabbath with the heart behind what Sabbath actually is trying to get us to do. And the heart behind it greatly impacts the pace at which culture is going. The culture of accomplishment, accumulation, tiredness, lack of delight. You see, Sabbath is a day that God has blessed us with to rest and recuperate. Isn't that sounding like what we need? It's a day that is more than a day off, more than a weekend or a Saturday filled with things to do. It's more than a religious practice that some of us may or may not know about. At the root of Sabbath, and this is where I want to land with the heart of Sabbath, at the root of it is resistance. And that's a wild word. Resistance. Because this is what Sabbath is. Sabbath is a resistance to culture. It's a day to look to God and know that he is good, he is faithful, and that the life you dream you could have is available to you now. It's not a distant thought. It's not way down the road when you finally understand, when you finally get it. Because we're taught to have the life we dream we want, you have to work for it, you have to strive for it, you have to sacrifice physical, emotional, mental health for it. To put it bluntly, this isn't true in God's design. This is not what he wants for you. This is not what he has designed our hearts to want, to experience. He did not intend our lives to be all effort. He gave us one day to rest and remember what life is about and who we live it for him. This is something that always blows my mind when I read this. In the Old Testament of the Bible, there's a story where God gives Moses the Ten Commandments. Maybe you've heard of the Ten Commandments before, and it was a time when God led the Israelites outside of Egypt, outside of slavery, into the life, and leading them into the life that he had promised for them. And as he begins to make this new nation, Israel, God saw their needs, and he gives them the Ten Commandments, with a lot more laws than that. But these Ten Commandments were crucial. Some of these commandments you might know: don't kill other people, don't steal, don't covet your neighbor's things, don't commit adultery. Those things we generally hear a lot of and know really well, and for the most part are pretty easy to follow. And these commandments, taken literally, they're easy to understand. Well, I shouldn't kill somebody. I shouldn't steal from somebody. That just makes sense. But listen to this. God was guiding them. He was guiding them on how the human heart acts and reacts. This is not only what the Ten Commandments does. This is a part of what the Ten Commandments were supposed to do. It shows the tendencies of human hearts. That to kill somebody, deeper than what kill means, is to want revenge, to have anger for somebody, to want justice for somebody, to kill them, to take what's yours, to take back what's yours. Well, that's that, to steal. You want something. We look all around sometimes within culture. I do this. I went to the lottery dream home, and I was like, oh my goodness, I want this. This would be so nice to have this home all set up for me, all free. See, it's like, it's so easy. Our heart's tendencies are being related to in the Ten Commandments. And so where am I going with this? This is where I'm going with this. Get this. Did you know that Sabbath was one of the Ten Commandments? I never think of that. This is what it says in Deuteronomy. This is what it says. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. Remember that you were once slaves in Egypt, but the Lord your God has brought you out with his strong and powerful arm. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day. He has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day. You see, our tendencies in our hearts is to go, go, go. And he's saying, stop. But more, further, let me take this further into Genesis. Genesis is the account of creation. Genesis chapter 1, right at the start, it says this. So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. On the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation. And so not only is the Sabbath something commanded for the Israelites, it's something God himself practiced at the beginning of creation, at the beginning of time. And of course, there's different views on creation. Some people believe it was made in 7 days. Some people believe it wasn't. Regardless, God rested. Isn't that wild? It's wild to me. I'm nerding out here. I love this stuff. So why do we have such a difficult time stopping? Why do we have such a difficult time giving God time in our weeks? And it could be many things, but what I've experienced in my life, in my moments of doubt, I just didn't trust God. I did not trust the time I have given to God would benefit me. That the time I would dedicate to him, whether it be a Sabbath day or 30 minutes, 15 minutes in my morning, it wasn't going to benefit me. I wasn't trusting that that time was crucial for me. And it pains me to say this because how could God, who designed us, know what's best for me? That's what I would say. But more than that, how could I trust God to protect me, to provide for me? How could I say these things to him to say that, God, you will guide me through my life, you will lead me through my life, but when it comes to this, this is where I wish to lead. I know what's best for myself in this area. And this is the good news. This is the good news today, my friends, that this is not how life has to be. And unfortunately, I only have so much time and I'm just scraping the surface of the amazing beauty of what Sabbath could be. But at the heart of it, the good news is that, especially for grads, hear me out on this. My fear is not the path that you will take as you enter this new stage of life. My fear is not the path you're going to end up on, where you'll end up, way down the road, way down the future. My fear is that you would enter this path thinking this beautiful life I'm talking about, the beautiful life you can dream of, that you think you can't have it today. He wants you to have it. He has commanded that we could have it. What God is offering to you is not a distant hope or a dream, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. And so the question that Sabbath asks us is, our lives holy? Are they set apart for his special purposes? Is it a life of uncommon goodness, or is it following the commonality, following the broad path of life around us? The deeper question is, are we putting ourselves in a space and a place to allow who we are becoming to be God, set by God, or by the pace the culture has given us? And I don't want you to leave discouraged today, because there's encouragement that in a world of accumulation, accomplishment, tiredness, lack of delight, there's a place where you can find rest and wholeness again. That if you keep going and you feel like nothing is going to happen, nothing is going to move differently in your life, you're going to wake up tired for the rest of your life. Maybe you're like, that doesn't sound like a big problem. I don't know. I really think it is. Life doesn't have to be like that. Because Sabbath, it points to the hope that what Jesus lived is for us today. Sabbath is that space. I believe church is that space, that youth group is that space, a place where you can be encouraged, uplifted by the community around you. There's so many dynamics I could get into, but the biggest thing I want to touch on is, will you resist? Will you go against the grain of culture? Will you meet God in a place that may seem difficult to get to, that requires you to choose God and trust Him in every action of your life? And then when life is too much, when life is too fast, ask yourself if you're placing your desires and pursuits on what this world wants of you. Check in with yourself, because what God wants for us, and it's as simple as this, is to stop, to rest, and delight in the life that He has given us. It can be hard to trust Him with that, to trust Him to think, oh, should I take this extra day off? I don't know if I'll make it next week. If I do, trust Him. That if you work 6 days a week or 7 days a week, trust Him in the time that you got to take. Trust Him that the 30 minutes in your morning that you dedicate to Him, to read your Bible, to pray with Him, it's not for naught. There's purpose behind it, to be peaceful and to live with God. And as culture tries to suck you into the current state of exhaustion, my heart is that you would allow yourself to become a child of God who lives in this design and plans He have for you. If you're tired, He is rest. If you're scared, He is hope. And if you feel you do not have enough, He is enough. Can we stand together today? And I want to leave you with this reading. It's a really sobering thought, and so I'm not putting it on the screen, but I ask that you would just listen to it. And I think, grads, as you go from here, I pray you would hold on to this, because this is the writer of Ecclesiastes. This is King Solomon, and he says this: don't let the excitement of youth cause you to forget your Creator. Honor Him in your youth before you grow old and say, life is not pleasant anymore. Remember Him before the light of the sun, moon, and stars is dim to your old eyes and rain clouds continually darken your sky. Remember Him before the door to life opportunity is closed and sound of work fades. Now you rise at the first chirping of the birds, but then the sounds will grow faint. Yes, remember your Creator now, while you are young, before the silver cord of life snaps and the golden bowl is broken. Don't wait until the water jar is smashed at the spring and the pulley is broken at the well, for then the dust will return to the earth and the spirit will return to God who gave it. It's a sobering thought in the sense that this writer, he's saying, remember Him. In the busyness of life, remember Him. When things seem too much, grads, when things seem too much, remember Him. So if I could leave you encouraged with this, remember that no matter what, God is always there for you, that all pursuits may be empty when you leave God out, that God has a plan and design for each one of us, and that culture is trying to say that can't happen without you giving your all to God. Remember Him, you guys. He's here for you. He's here with you. He will always be with you. And grads, no matter where you walk, He's there. He's there. So Father, today, we look to You and we thank You. God, I wish I could go so much more into all these amazing aspects, but Lord, at the center of it all, can we resist? God, I pray You would help us resist culture, to resist the pace this life sets of us, that we could find joy and goodness in You, in the beauty all around us, in the beauty in community, and the community we're about to have in this lunch. God, we thank You for who You are, and we thank You that You've gifted us rest. And Lord, for those who are here tired even now, God, I pray that You would speak to their hearts, that You would hold them, and You would take the burdens that they're holding on to and give them Your easy burden, God. And that we'd walk from here with joy and delight, knowing that this life You've offered to us, we can have it today. We don't have to work for it. We don't have to strive for it. We can just surrender to You. We thank You, God, in Your name. Amen.